Welcome to NHL at the Rink. This is the first episode of our weekly podcast. I'm Dan Rosen, and I'll be your host. And we certainly thank you for listening. This podcast is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have guests of all kinds on this podcast, players, coaches, execs, NHL.com writers. We're really going to run the gamut, give you a look at all 31 teams. We certainly encourage you to participate, and you can find us on Twitter, at the Rink, and I'm at DRosenNHL. And there's really no better way to get into the first podcast than really just to get into the first podcast with our first guest, a guy who I consider a very close friend and our first line center at NHL.com, our columnist, Nick Kotsenika. He is based in Detroit, but he was recently in Florida. This guy travels a lot, by the way. So he was in Florida covering the Panthers. But before we get to that, Nick, and so many other topics that I'd like to cover with you here, I got to ask you about the decision made by the National Hockey League Players Association on Monday. They decided not to opt out of the current collective bargaining agreement, the same decision the NHL made earlier this month, which means we've got labor peace in the NHL for at least three more years, hopefully longer than that if they can come to an extension. Nick, what's your take on the NHLPA's decision?
I think it's outstanding news, and I think the biggest takeaway for me is that, like, we all know we've had work stoppages in the past.
Yes, we do.
This is the reason for the work stoppages was to get to a point to where the sides are at now. I think, you know, both sides, there are things they would like to change. But the fundamental system now is at a point where it works for both sides. You know, the 50-50 revenue split has created a lot of good things for the league, and now it's about ironing out details, making adjustments, and the fundamental system is in a healthy place, and I think that's the biggest takeaway for me.
Which is why we hope that they can come to an extension of some sort with some negotiations involved, right?
Obviously, that's what I think we're all hoping. I mean, labor pieces makes for lots of other good things, obviously, and if they're at a point where each has decided that it doesn't need to open the CBA right now, that gives me a lot of hope that they can work it out and extend it beyond three more years.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about what you were just doing, though. Let's get into the meat of the NHL and what this season's going to be. You were with Florida. You were with the Panthers for a couple of days at the start of their camp. What's your take on the Panthers right now? What do you think they can be? What are they saying about what they believe they can be?
I'm bullish on the Panthers. I think they're on the cusp. I looked at this team last couple years.
I think they're there, Nick. I don't think they're on the – I think they're there.
Show me. Okay, that's sure. Where I'm at. And that's what I loved about Dale Tallon's message to them day one was, let's see. Like, I'm not going to crown them anything yet. Like, they've been, frankly, a disappointment in the past. They've got a talented core, a talented young core. So now let's see it. You've got a coach in Quenneville who I think is perfect for this group. With his experience and the way he wants to play. You've got a goalie who's won two Vezina trophies, who's going to solve their biggest issue, which has been even strength save percentage. He's the best in the league over the last 7 years. So now let's see it. They've got all the tools. They've got everything they need to win, everything they need to draw fans. So let's see him put it on the ice.
I agree with you. We got to see it, but we can only judge on paper right now, which is why I said I think they're there, because they've got the positions filled. You'd have to agree with that, right? I mean, they have the key areas filled right now.
Well, in a vacuum, yeah. But, like, actually, they should call this podcast Dan's Wrong, because we'll just argue
well,
all day.
Well, that's fine. But okay, here we go.
But here's what else is on paper.
Tampa it's not Bay, the name we're going with.
Boston, Toronto, Montreal, Buffalo's better. You know, like, it's a tough division.
Yes, there are good teams in the division, Nick. We get that.
Yeah. So, like, okay, great. You're better. But you've got to win games and you got to make the playoffs. So I think, you know, that's going to be their challenge is, are you good enough now to compete and win games, make the playoffs and make noise in the playoffs? And I want to see it.
Does Quenneville look at this team similar to the way he looked at the Blackhawks when he took over there?
Don't give away my stories.
I'm not Come giving on. Away anything. Yeah. I'm asking you a question.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, and that's a big story I'm working on for NHL.com is, there's a lot of parallels between the stage the Panthers are at now and what the Blackhawks were when Quenneville got there. And it's not me saying that. It's Patrick Kane saying that. It's Dale Talon saying that. Like, I talked to Troy Brower down there, and he sees it. You know, they're at a point where they've got a young core with a lot of potential, and now you've got a veteran coach replacing a rookie coach. And he's going to play a style that I think is going to work well for them. He plays a simple, predictable style, gives them freedom within that structure to let their skill come out. And I think there's a lot of potential here for the Florida Panthers to take off.
What are three other teams, and I'll cap it at three, that you're looking at right now other than Florida that are really catching your eye, that you're keeping a close eye on in camp?
Well, Colorado. You know, I covered them in the second round last season, and I just see that team on the upswing. I like the moves they made in the offseason. I think Nathan McKinnon is ready to just take off. Dallas, to me, is a team I've been watching for a long time. The Stars were a double overtime goal from beating the team that eventually won the Stanley Cup. Add Joe Pavelski, which, you know, addresses one of their needs. That's another team. And, you know, I think in your neighborhood, I think the Rangers and the Devils are just very interesting just because of the additions that they made in the offseason. You know, sorry, I already screwed it up.
I asked for three, you gave four.
But I could go on and on. I've got another... a whole list of teams that I think are really interesting.
You know, it's interesting. The three of those teams you mentioned, the Devils, the Rangers, and the Avalanche, Cale Makar in Colorado, Jack Hughes with the Devils, and Kaapo Kakko with the Rangers. No surprise if those guys run 1, 2, 3 in the Calder votes. What are your expectations for those three?
Well, I mean, Hughes, you see, it's just a preseason game, but right away.
He looked pretty good, though.
In NHL uniform. You know, it's hard to judge for me him just how his skill will translate in the full NHL. I mean, but Makar is the most known quantity to me just because I got to watch him live play some playoff games. And I think I was just stunned at how comfortable he was. And the funniest thing, we're at the player media tour, and he's telling me, he's like, you know, I said, what about this year? And he's like, well, I'm looking forward to fully understanding like our D-zone coverage. And whatever. I'm like, you didn't fully understand the D-zone coverage last year? He's like, no, because I was just blacked out. I was just playing hockey. Like, he was playing on adrenaline and instinct in the playoffs and looked great. So when he gets his legs under him and gets his, you know, mentally knowing what he's supposed to be doing out there, I'm really excited.
And I love what Joe Sakic did this offseason, because you recognize that Cale Makar can take those minutes, can play first power play, can play 20 to 25 minutes a night probably in the NHL. So you trade Tyson Barrie and you get yourself a need in Nazem Kadri. I love what Joe Sakic did. I think they're a team, like you said, I think they are certainly a team on the rise.
Well, they get Kadri, so they upgrade in the middle. They added some depth in some other areas. You've got an up-and-coming defense. Like, there's just a lot to like about Colorado. I mean, this is a team that I thought was, you know, 2-3 years from being really good, and they were really good last year.
Yeah.
Right? So here we go. You know, their biggest competition, too, is just their division is insane.
Is it the best division in the league, you think?
Well, I want to say that, yes, but, I mean, the Atlantic had, what, 3 of the top 7 teams in the league last
year?
Yeah,
but that's not the division I would look at in the East. I'd look at the Metro, because I think the Metro, Nick, any one of those teams can make a legitimate argument for why they should be in the playoffs this season. I don't think you can say that about the Atlantic. You can certainly probably say it about the Central, though.
I think the Atlantic is best at the top. I think the Central is best throughout, if that makes any sense. But
okay.
Even the Atlantic, like, I think Buffalo is really interesting. I want to see if Ralph Kruger can get them to take a step. We already talked about Florida. Montreal's still, you know, in the mix. But I think Central, just in terms of kind of top to bottom, is just the best quality. Like, pick a winner, I'm going to throw a dart. I mean, I think Dallas can win the division. Nashville can win the division. St. Louis can win the division. They won the Cup. Colorado, like, I just, like, it's very intriguing to me.
You mentioned Kruger. Is the guy who comes, I mean, he's got obviously a significant hockey background, but he's only coached one season in the NHL, and his last 5 years he spent in another sport as the president of Southampton in EPL. What do you think Ralph Kruger can do with the Sabres, Nick? And can he get on the same page with Jack Eichel, which it seems to me the other two coaches that had Eichel, Dan Bylsma and Phil Housley, struggled to get on that page with Jack Eichel. And I think that's so key in Buffalo for the coach and Jack to be on the same page.
Well, what I think he can do is get a Dos Equis commercial. He's the most interesting man in hockey. Like
he certainly is. He's
like,
unreal.
We could have a whole series of podcasts on Ralph Kruger. The answer is I don't know. Like, but I like the idea here, and I like the potential. He's a different kind of coach. He's very interesting. He's very cerebral. He, you know, we saw it in the World Cup where he was able to get a team to come together quickly and believe, you know, and maybe that's what the Sabres need. So I'm just, it's really early, but I'm really kind of intrigued by the hire. I'm not judging it yet. I really want to see what Ralph can do with this group with a fresh perspective in a lot of ways.
Yeah, well, they have some key, they have their guys. They got Jack Eichel, they got Rasmus Dahlin, right? So you know Jason Botterill. He understands the pressure that they're under in Buffalo, how they haven't made the playoffs in a long time. They got to show progress this season. This can't be another year of, well, we were good at the start and we kind of faded at the end. They got to show progress. They can't fade at the end. Even if they're not in the playoffs, they have to show an upward trend, whereas the last few years, it's been the other way.
Well, I think last year was unfortunate that they were first in the league in whatever date it was in November. Like, I think that got everybody excited, got expectations too high, too fast. And then when they faded, it looked worse than it was. Like, I think you want to make steady progress. My worry for Jason is you take over a team that has missed for a long time with a passionate fan base that's impatient, wants it turned around now, okay? I want to see steady, methodical building. That's what I more care about than some instant success.
Right.
Right? So, like, I want to see that kind of progress. I think the way the season went last year, there was some fool's gold in the beginning, and that made everybody more sour at the end.
Let's stay in the division. Mitch Marner saying he rejected offer sheets before signing with the Leafs eventually. Sebastian Aho didn't do that. Sebastian Aho took the offer sheet because he wanted to be in training camp right away. He got signed. Carolina matched it. Done. Were you surprised that Marner did that?
No.
Takes away his leverage, though. Doesn't, I mean,
he got paid.
He got paid, and in the end it works out, but it certainly at the time it seems like it takes away his leverage if he doesn't take that offer sheet, and he's got to have a read if the Leafs are going to match it or not.
Yeah, but I think he must have had a read on the situation. He's a Toronto kid. He's in a great situation. He's got a team that can win, and there was no saying he couldn't sign an offer sheet later. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know that he had to do it then. You know, he still had that card to play if he wanted to play it later. You know, look, he got paid. You know, it worked out. Now you got to deliver. You know, the only thing with the Maple Leafs for me is you've got some guys now making huge money who are great players, but they haven't won anything. Okay? So it's become more difficult to surround them with the supporting cast they need, but they've got to carry that team now. They got to lead the way. They've got to win. It's time for this team to take the next step.
Do you buy that the pressure is really on Mike Babcock this season?
I buy that there's pressure. I mean, there's definitely pressure. That, like I just said, they've got to win. Like, it's not good enough now to get in the playoffs and be bounced in the first round again. You know, so yes, there's pressure. Does it have to be this season or he's gone? I don't necessarily buy that. I think there's a lot more that goes into it. But yeah, pressure's on. Pressure's on that team in general.
Like, all the time. Fine. Yeah, all the time.
But, like, I don't just mean the Toronto media and all that.
No, it's time. They haven't won a playoff series since what? What was it, 2004 was the last time they won a playoff series?
Yeah, like, let's go. Like we got this young core. These young stars are getting paid. I mean, they're outstanding players. Like, I don't begrudge them for getting paid. But, you know, like, now you got to produce. You got to produce. You got to win.
Who would you name captain?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I got my answer, but I want to hear yours first.
You know, like, Austin Matthews is their best player, but I think John Tavares is their captain.
I wanted to say you were wrong, but you're right. That's who I would name captain.
I'm right?
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you were wrong.
No, I would name Tavares captain. There's no question. Let's get to another team, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Evgeny Malkin, Nick, has talked about how he wants to be rejuvenated. Sidney Crosby's talked about the window open. Chris Letang saying the window to win still there. Do you buy the window to win is still there in Pittsburgh?
Absolutely. I mean, I think anytime you have Sidney Crosby still at the height of his powers, and Evgeny Malkin is still capable of being a dominant player in this league, Chris Letang is still Chris Letang. Yes. Now it's a matter of, you know, things coming together and the supporting cast being good. But yeah, they can win. Their window's open. Absolutely. And are they perfect? No. But they weren't in 2016 either. I think that was the year people thought their defense wasn't good enough. And they won the Stanley Cup. So, yes, they can win.
Quickly, the New Jersey Devils. Taylor Hall, you think he re-signs eventually? Is this a playoff team?
I think it has the potential to be a playoff team. I think it's a team on the rise. I think they've done everything they can to make it attractive for Taylor to want to re-sign. To say definitively I think he's going to, I don't know, because I think if he goes to free agency, he's going to be very attractive. But I think the worst-case scenario for them is they have a motivated player and they have a decision to make. But I really like the direction the Devils are going, and if I'm Taylor Hall, I'm taking that very seriously as I consider what I want to do.
Yeah, I think they need to see it too. I think, I mean, coming back from the season he had last year with the injury, didn't play after Christmas. He was a Hart Trophy winner, but is there something to prove for Taylor Hall, do you think?
Maybe just that he's healthy. You know, I think he's a outstanding player. Like, he wasn't fully healthy, I think, when he won the Hart. So I want to see him healthy and playing the way he's capable of playing. To me, that's the only thing he has to prove.
Last one for you, same division. Artemi Panarin says he's more comfortable in New York. He doesn't feel pressure in New York, which is different from what athletes who come and sign big deals in New York say. Said he felt more pressure in Columbus. Do you buy that from Panarin? And what do you think of the Rangers and their chances to potentially also be a playoff team this year?
I wouldn't buy it from most players, but I buy it from Artemi Panarin. Like, if you know him at all, not a lot bothers him. He's a kind of a happy-go-lucky guy. He loves to play hockey. You know, I think now what he means by less pressure is the contract thing is gone, right? The future question is gone. He's where he wanted to be. So I think that was the pressure for him, and now he can just play the game. Are they a playoff team? I think they got a shot. I don't know that I'm picking them to make the playoffs, but yeah, I think they got a shot, especially if, you know, like Kako comes in and is you know, a difference maker for them.
I agree, which I'm upset about because we didn't disagree nearly enough on this interview, Nick.
Yeah. You're right again, which is disappointing.
This was great, Nick. Thanks so much, man. I appreciate you doing this, okay?
All right, Danny. Talk to you soon.
That was great with Nick. We really got to cover a lot of the NHL right there. And you could follow Nick on Twitter, at Kotsanika is his handle. He's got a bunch of stories up on the Panthers right now on NHL.com. He covers just about everything for us. And Nick and I tend to disagree a lot, but we actually agreed on a lot of things in that interview from Taylor Hall. Yeah, I do. I think Taylor Hall's got to show something this year before he signs with the Devils. I think that's what the Devils might even be waiting for, although they'd like to get him under contract. Got to see it. He's coming off a big knee injury. Artemi Panarin, I think he's right. Less pressure on Panarin internally, more externally, but Panarin is comfortable with where he's at. John Tavares, I agree, should be the next captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's got a history of it. He's been the captain before the New York Islanders. He was a good captain, and he's going to be there for a long time in Toronto. So good stuff with Nick. One thing Nick does a lot, though, he goes to Las Vegas to cover the Vegas Golden Knights. We had a chance to sit down and chat with a Vegas Golden Knights player, Jonathan Marchessault, who last season had 59 points in 82 games, 25 goals, 34 assists. His path to the NHL, his path in the NHL has been quite interesting, and he's landed in Vegas where he's quite happy, where a lot of players go to be quite happy these days. The Vegas Golden Knights are certainly a hit in the NHL. So we sat down with Jonathan, and we talked about that and more. The first thing I want to ask you about, it's a topic that's gone on for a couple of years now, just the explosion of hockey in Vegas. Describe it, just what this is like to be a part of this phenomenon.
It's kind of hard to describe. Like, it's like people are trying to like describe like the feeling at T-Mobile. You can't really know it until you experience it, and it's the best experience you can have in the NHL. So I mean, the city's the same. Like, we've done so much in only 2 years, and I think as an organization and a team, we're not satisfied. I think we want more. We want to definitely bring a Stanley Cup to Vegas. And it all comes down to also our owner and GMs make a good job to always have a competitive team out there and give us the best chance to win it. And the fans are just, they're so great too. They're so nice to us. They make us feel welcome. They know we come from other places, and they make sure we're all we're all settled in and fine, and like they're actually genuine. They want to know how you're doing today, and like thanks for what you're doing for your community and stuff like that. And it never gets old for us.
You're raising a family there now, family that grew this summer, right? Baby boy was born.
Yeah,
is that number four?
Yeah,
for you.
Yeah,
four kids raising a family right outside, and you're in Summerlin, I believe, right outside in Vegas. When you heard Vegas before you got there, I'm sure you had thoughts of the Strip and whatever it may be. What's it like to raise a family there?
It's the best of both worlds, too. Like, the suburbs there where we live in Summerlin, it's all new. It's beautiful houses, beautiful places, good restaurants. It's just, like, family-oriented. It's unbelievable. And also, the good thing as well is, like, when you want to have fun, like, just go out for dinner. You're in the best city in the world. You have everything there. So it's the best feeling to be able to be there.
You're talking about being settled in Vegas. Essentially, that's kind of the vibe I get from you, of being happy and, you know, with a family and settled. For the longest time in your career, you were unsettled. Take me back to those early days in your career. You don't get drafted. You sign with Connecticut. You play in Springfield. You're up and down with Tampa. You play in Florida, Columbus, up and down with Tampa. I mean, your journey to being settled has been quite interesting. What has it been like for you? Do you think back to what you have had to go through to get here?
Yeah, sometimes I still don't realize it, like that I'm here. But I mean, it's been a roller coaster career, that's for sure. Never settled and always on the move, and like. It started the year that we had a newborn. My wife was pregnant. We had to move three times before our first child was born.
Where'd you move?
From Springfield to Syracuse a month before the birth of my child.
Born. Yeah.
After I got to Syracuse, I did the full year there. It was unbelievable. So much fun. The year after. My daughter was born, and I got called up a couple weeks after. Was always on the bubble with Tampa, and my family and my two kids under 2 years old, they came and lived with me at the hotel for 4 months, I would say.
4 months in a hotel with wife and two kids.
Yeah, it was
not young kids.
Yeah, under two. Yeah, no, it was not ideal. And in the summer as well, like after that year, we lived in the hotel during a Black Ace. So during a full year, I stayed 6 months in the hotel with my kids. It was not ideal.
Marriott in Tampa?
Yeah. Marriott. After we went to right across the street, the Embassy Suites.
Yeah.
So and we were still moving there, hotel rooms, all the suitcase and the kids' toys and everything. And like it was tough. And that's one of the moments I wanted to settle in. Like I wanted to give a life to my kids, not necessarily like moving always like that. I want them to have memories somewhere, and I worked the hardest as I could, and like make it a little bit more stability in Florida. We were like, it was familiar for us because we stayed at my father-in-law's house. He wasn't staying there all winter, so we were just staying there, and it was like familiar for us. It was like some stability. My oldest started going to school a little bit, a couple of days a week, and have a good year. And after, when you think you have a good year and you actually made it, it just brings you right back to hurt. And
moved again.
The expansion arrived, and here I am in Vegas, and still working hard. And after, I was able to get some stability.
Was there any point throughout all of what you just described where you were wondering to yourself, is this worth it?
It was worth it because the lifestyle. I mean, it was still like, at some point, I know you get. I was doing what I loved, but I was before I made that first year in Tampa, the first full season. I was before that season. I told my wife, "This is my last year in North America. Like, if I don't make it to the NHL, I'm going to Europe," and it worked out.
You were willing to take the whole family to Europe to keep playing.
I was ready to just maybe have two kids, go with my wife in Europe, and like if we're going to travel, we're going to do it over there.
And you touched on it a little bit. When you finally feel like you have a role in Florida, you have a good year, was it devastating to you that it was that it, that you had to move on from that?
The word I would say it's surprising. I was surprised.
Okay.
I thought I should have been in that protection list that they had, but I mean, just kept you honest again. Like you didn't prove anything to the NHL. You just have to keep going. And had a good year again the year after that. And last year I was disappointed with my year. And it just keeps you honest. Wants you more, and I want to go back to what's having a good season.
What were you disappointed about last year?
My consistency. I would show up for a game. Two other games, my work ethic was not as good. And then I was just back and forth like that before Christmas a lot. After Christmas, it turned around a little bit more. I started feeling more comfortable, but...
Were you feeling settled, and maybe that's why the work ethic?
Not necessarily.
Dropped?
I don't know what happened. I was maybe satisfied, but
that's what I mean. Yeah,
I was satisfied, but I don't think you should ever be satisfied. I think you should always want more. And that's how I think.
Is it last year that motivates you, or other than the obvious winning the Stanley Cup, what continues to motivate you?
I think it's the dream of a little boy that I just want to play hockey and win the Stanley Cup, but. What drives me a lot is making my kids proud. Like, I was lucky to have them as a young age. I'm 28 years old and have four kids under five. So they're going to live it with me, and I want them to have good memories of their dad, not just being a passenger, but doing something good. And I think that's what motivates me the most.
What's home life like? Four kids under five.
Busy. It's busy, but they go at school, so during their weeks, not too bad. But it's busy, and... I love having people in my house, so it's perfect.
I would imagine it gives you that break, right, from what you do to who you are.
Yeah. I was always good to doing that. I'm a guy that when I have a bad game, pretty pissed after. But when I wake up, I go to the rink, it's a new day. I'm going to do everything I can to make sure the next game is going to be better.
One of the things I found about you, too, and talking to you a few times, was the honesty and how vocal you are and brutally honest. Like you just said, you know, when you have a game, I'm pissed. Where does that come from? You know, that approach that you have, especially, you know, public, in front of media.
I think at the time, my coach in junior had Patrick Roy for 4 years.
He's honest.
Yeah, I wasn't so pleased with him at the time. Let's say it that way. I think he was really, really hard on me, but I think that's where I get it from, the desire to win every time I do something, the healthy competition that I want to have with the opponent, and I think I get a lot of his passion. I think he definitely gave it to me.
2 years ago, you go to the Stanley Cup Final. Last year, after you guys were eliminated, the way you guys were eliminated. Were you able to watch hockey?
I went in Europe after. I went to World Championship, so it's kind of hard to follow the game because the games were at 2 a.m. in the morning for us.
That's true, yeah.
But so I didn't.
How about
really,
after you got back?
When I got back, I followed a little bit the finals, but it's kind of sour, you know, when you know you should be there, but you're not. So it was hard, but for me, I was super happy for David Perron. Like, I played with him. He's good. One of my good friends, and been in the NHL for 10 years, and he never raised it, and he raised it for the first time. So super happy for him, and definitely wish to accomplish that one day.
Expectations for your team are high this year. Reasonable for them to be as high as they are?
It should be. We have a good team. I think it's nothing we cannot handle. We're a good team. We believe in us. We as a team, we believe we can be a great team this year, and it's all about staying healthy and staying on the same page and definitely pushing the same direction.
Perfect spot to end. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thank you.
So there you have it with Jonathan Marchessault, and you could really get a sense in that interview how open and honest he is about last season, his personal season, how it ended for the Golden Knights, and really his path and how it's motivated him to continue to prove those doubters wrong. I love that from Jonathan Marchessault. I love the openness and the honesty. It was great to hear him talk that way in that interview. One of the other things we're doing for the NHL at the Rink podcast is we're talking to players about specific moments in their career, moments that they'll never forget, their welcome to the NHL moment, their most comical or embarrassing moment, their greatest moment, moments like this one.
Ladd wedged off the puck. Puck taken back by Campbell, left point. Drops it to Kane on the left half board. Here's Kane now, juking his way to the right, lower left corner. Should he score? Oh, no, that's turned wide by Leighton. Loose puck in the crease. And now it's in the net. They score!
It's in!
The Hawks win the Stanley Cup! The Hawks win the Stanley Cup! Leighton is down on his knees in the goal crease. And that one looked like it slid past him into the net. They're going to go and take a look. They're going to take a look upstairs. But everybody on the ice, nobody knew where the puck was. Leighton froze in the goal crease. Let's see what we have here.
It's in the back of the net.
It's in the back of the net. The Hawks have won the Stanley Cup. Blackhawk fans around the world, you've endured 49 years of frustration. But your patience has finally paid off. Lord Stanley's new address is Sweet Home Chicago. The Chicago Blackhawks have won the Stanley Cup. They've won the Stanley Cup.
Chicago fans certainly will never forget that call. That's John Wideman and Troy Murray on the Chicago Blackhawks radio network calling Patrick Kane's overtime winning goal in Game 6 of the 2010 Stanley Cup Final in Philadelphia to clinch the Blackhawks' first Stanley Cup championship. They are now celebrating the 10-year anniversary of that championship, and we had a chance to sit down with the goal scorer himself, Patrick Kane, to talk about that anniversary and more.
Crazy how time flies, and you know, obviously I was 21 at the time, so it was a fun time in my life for sure. Obviously scoring that goal, winning the Stanley Cup, and I think Sharpie takes credit saying that he knew the puck was in before I did, but I like to fight him back on that one. And then what did he say to me? I think maybe like 5 or 10 minutes after I scored, he actually came up to me and said, "Hey, you know, I'm really happy we won and happy you scored, but I was wide open in the slot when you shot that puck." So we always laugh about that. And he acts like he's not serious, but I think he was a little bit. And, you know, just kind of reliving it. And, like, they were showing the goal at the convention this year and just everyone's reaction, right? Like, some guys are coming down to Niemi with me. Other guys are looking back at the ref. They're looking at the net, looking at each other to see what's going on. So pretty weird how the whole thing unfolded.
What was the moment that you realized that the NHL dream could become reality? You weren't in the league yet, but you kind of understood, like, I'm close and I can do this.
I think I knew I wanted to take hockey, like, very seriously when I moved away at home. I was 14 years old and just going into high school, and I moved away, so I knew that I wanted to make the most of it. I think I was at the U.S. program and playing with a player, Eric Johnson, who was, you know, scheduled to go first overall. I was on his team and, you know, saw what an amazing player he was, knew I was coming up in the draft, so maybe would be able to make it and play. And then once I was in London, and it was like right before Christmas, right before the World Junior Tournament, and I remember going to eat, and Dave Gagne, Sam's dad, was in there too, and he was telling us that scouts were starting to say that maybe I could go number one overall. So that's when I really started thinking, okay, you know, maybe this could be a possibility.
What about your welcome to the NHL moment? So you're in the league now.
Yeah.
What welcomed you to the league?
I think it was it's probably all in the same game, actually. My first game was in Minnesota. Played pretty well. We lost 1-0, but the next game was at home against the Red Wings. And remember going up against Lidstrom, trying to, like, get a couple passes by him, and he was knocking them out of the air. I think he knocked, like, 3 out of the air that game. So I was like, this isn't a fluke with this guy. This is why he's this good, you know? And then as the game went on, we were down 3-1. We ended up tying at 3-3. Went to overtime. Nothing happened. And then Savvy put me out there to go in the shootout first and was going down against my boyhood hero in Hasek. So it was a pretty crazy moment. Ended up scoring on him. I remember celebrating in the locker room and with my family and friends after. And I remember he was walking down the hallway and I asked him for a picture. So he said, "Yeah, sure, I'll take a picture." Took a picture with him, and then he kind of looked at me like, "Hey, aren't you that kid that just scored on me in the shootout?" So it was a good night. A lot of good memories from Lidstrom knocking pucks down to scoring on Hasek to having that picture with him.
What a terrific story with Patrick Kane and Dominic Hasek. And what guts of Kane to go ask Hasek for a picture after he scores the shootout winner against him. That's the confidence that Patrick Kane has. He's had it for his entire career. Well, that'll do it for this edition of NHL at the Rink. The first episode is in the books. We hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. And certainly, we want your feedback. Rate and review us. You can subscribe to this podcast on all your podcast platforms. It's free. Who doesn't like free? Everybody likes free. Give us some feedback on the rate and review part of it. Also, on Twitter, at the Rink is the handle. Give us some feedback there. We want you to be a part of this podcast. Ask us some questions. We'll incorporate it into the show. And of course, we're also happy to be part of the NHL Podcast Network now. Remember, we've got NHL Fantasy on Ice for all your fantasy needs. The NHL Executive Suite with Deb Placey. New episodes are coming. She's spoken to Bill Guerin, Kyle Dubas among the executives. So until next week, I'm Dan Rosen for NHL at the Rink. Thanks for listening. We look forward to a great season ahead.